We're discussing domestic violence and what can be done to stop it. This is a difficult conversation, so please take care as you're with us on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. A headline late last year in the New England Journal of Medicine, physicians described intimate partner violence during COVID as a pandemic within a pandemic. They found the pandemic highlighted just how much more work needs to be done to ensure that people who experience abuse can continue to get support, refuge, medical care when a public health disaster strikes. Were you in an abusive relationship? Did the pandemic and stay-at-home orders affect your ability to get help? What resources do you wish you had access to? 800-642-1234. Monique Minkins is Executive Director of End Domestic Abuse Wisconsin. Monique, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you for having me.
We also have Tiffany Parker here, who is Director of Inpatient Behavioral Health Addiction Services and Domestic Violence Services with Ignition Healthcare in Fond du Lac, which is a part of SSM Health. Tiffany, welcome to you.
Thank you for having me as well.
Well, Tiffany, let's start with you. You know, asking for help can be difficult. What are some of the obstacles that you face for your staff in providing support for victims of domestic violence?
So particularly, as you mentioned before, with the pandemic, it was quite challenging in the beginning to navigate how we can still reach victims of domestic violence and their families safely. With having the lockdowns in place, we didn't want to put someone in potentially more danger by reaching out in the ways that we had developed previously, where patients were able to come in person and, you know, potentially tell the person in their household that was harming them that they were going to such and such appointment and able to kind of cover that by coming into our clinic. And so when we learned of these things, our staff, particularly at our agency, you know, got together as a team and started to figure out for each type of patient and each patient's unique situation, what were ways that we could help with this. One of the things that our team did develop as a greater resource for these patients is it developed an educational program that recurred virtually once a month. It couldn't be necessarily a support program. Again, trying to be mindful and careful about someone, you know, doing a support group within their home, but doing an educational program and being able to have still some access. And again, this is a way also for clinicians to, if they didn't have regular contact, be able to know that their patient was okay.
Yeah.
So there are different ways to get creative that way.
Monique, what have you seen through End Domestic Abuse Wisconsin in this pandemic as you try to reach out and serve survivors and advocates?
We have definitely seen an increase in domestic violence since the pandemic. You know, it's not just the increase, it's the severity of the situations that have also intensified. And there are still some stats that have yet to be collected, and yet nationwide we know that DV incidents rose by 8.1% during the pandemic shutdowns. And this is by an analysis by the National Commission on COVID-19 and Criminal Justice. And we don't have those statistics in Wisconsin. And yet the stories that I hear from programs indicates to me that there has been an uptick and that the severity of the cases have left advocates really struggling as well.
You know, something I know you've talked about before, Monique, that weighs heavily on your mind is the underreporting, the inability to reach people of all backgrounds who can't reach out for help or who don't trust authorities. What do you think must be done to better serve the whole community?
You know, I think that we have to look at how we set up the system and go from there and undo it. You can try and insert some things into a system that was already not serving people, or you can, sometimes it's okay to reinvent the wheel so that you are having all of these voices come in that have not necessarily been at the table. And so we have to find ways to hear all survivors and find out what it is they're asking for that they need in order to meet those needs and move accordingly, trusting that they are the experts of what they need and of themselves. That would be that's where I would start.
Yeah. Tiffany, what about you? What training have you been focusing on for your staff so that you can better meet the needs and really meet victims where they're at?
I wholeheartedly agree with Monique. I think they're the experts. Our clients and patients are the experts of their relationship, and we've been really relying on them at this time as to what they need. And honestly, some of those things really purely are basic needs. You know, we look at Maslow's hierarchy of needs, and if someone's basic needs at the bottom are not met first, we can't continue, you know, to offer advocacy, to offer therapy, to offer potentially psychiatric care. Sometimes those things cannot really be accomplished or accomplished successfully until we really meet the basic needs. One of the things we see a lot right now is childcare issues. We're having, particularly with the pandemic too, that was another barrier. Oftentimes the daycares were shut down. We didn't have enough staff. And so a lot of our clients, we made accommodations at times to have clients with their children at the clinic because there wasn't really an option otherwise. And it was kind of one of those safety types of situations. But unfortunately, when parents are bringing their children into session or they're bringing them in, sometimes they're, as you can imagine, quite distracted and not able to really focus on themselves because they have those other responsibilities. And so, again, our agency has been really focusing on different creative ways to raise funds or to create different relationships in the community for resources to meet those basic needs first prior to processing more of that therapeutic need that the patient has.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with Tiffany Parker, who directs inpatient behavioral health, addiction services, and domestic violence services with Ignition Healthcare in Fond du Lac. Monique Minkins leads End Domestic Abuse Wisconsin, serving survivors and advocates around the state for over 40 years. You can join in. Where do you see a domestic violence in your life, in your community, and how have you tried to make a difference? Did you ever leave someone because they displayed abusive behavior? What was that red flag for you? How did you make an exit plan? 800-642-1234. Monique, looking at children in domestic violence situations and in these conflicts, what do you see there and how do you help the kids?
You know, it's domestic violence. It affects everyone. It affects the whole community, the whole family, including the children. I often think of when I see an Amber Alert, the first thing I think is that's domestic violence. And often, lots of times it is. And so it does affect the children. It affects how they navigate in school and how they navigate among their friends. There are lots of statistics that show that as they get older, some children perpetuate what they've seen, and some choose to do differently. And it affects how they feel secure in their home. And sometimes there is this triangulation that the person that's making a family feel unsafe will do so that there is some leverage. And so the child is often in the middle of the situation as well. And trying to decide which parent. And so lots of times when families do separate or the person that's surviving leaves, it's a recreation or a rebuilding of that relationship between parent and child because of the situation.
Tiffany, how do you navigate those relationships, the child in the situation?
I think we have this challenge often in this field because oftentimes when we are in touch with a child or in touch with a parent who's bringing a child, obviously, for therapy treatment, there's typically, you know, one parent presenting or one parent's perspective. And so it's a challenge for therapists in the clinic oftentimes to, you know, be objective to what the situation is based on how the parent is presenting. I think that the biggest thing that our clinicians know, what we train our staff to know, is that we have to follow our ethical guidelines and be as objective as possible and try to have multiple perspectives when working with that child to preserve whatever relationships, positive and healthy relationships, they still have with their parents, despite who may be the person making them feel unsafe or the person that is unfortunately receiving the abuse in the household that they may be witnessing. Because we do know and that children can still have that those feelings of affection and love for the person that is being harmful.
Tiffany Parker there. She directs domestic violence services with Ignition Healthcare. Monique Minkins, executive director of End Domestic Abuse Wisconsin, a statewide coalition to end domestic abuse. You can join in. Did you ever leave an abusive relationship? What was that like for you? What questions do you have about domestic violence, assault, abusive relationships? Join in any point, 800-642-1234. Back in a moment on the Ideas Network. We're discussing intimate partner violence, how to break the cycle. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The World Health Organization, it calls it a major public health problem. Globally, the WHO says about 1 in 3 women experienced physical or sexual violence, mostly by an intimate partner. Have you or a loved one been in an abusive relationship? Did you seek help? Are you with an organization supporting victims of domestic violence? What is your work like? Join in, 800-642-1234. Tiffany Parker works on domestic violence services for Ignition Healthcare, and Monique Minkins leads End Domestic Abuse Wisconsin. Monique, we heard recently that Sojourner Family Peace Center launched a 24-hour domestic violence text line in Milwaukee. And I'm wondering what you think of that in trying to reach people, bring resources, make it easier for people to reach out for help.
I think it's amazing. As long as we can find a safe way for people to contact services, we need to do that. It's not just pick up the phone or stop by. Those options aren't always available. Someone maybe can't talk, but they can text. And so if that is an option that is available, most definitely, I think it should be an option for as many people as we can make it available to. And so I remember hearing about that, or I when I heard about it, I thought this is really amazing. And I think about, you know, younger people who text, although it used to be that it was mostly younger people, but younger people who text and text a joiner who may or may not be able to serve them, but can connect them to other services that are available. And so any way that we can reach people is golden.
Yeah. I'm wondering, what are ways that you are able to reach out to victims and to be able to get them comfortable speaking and feeling safe? I mean, what have been some effective avenues for you?
You know, when I think about in domestic abuse, we are not a direct service organization. We're the state coalition for the programs around the state. Mm-hmm. And so when someone calls us, and they usually call or they email, then we connect them to a program. And yet I know that programs, sometimes if they are tabling at an event, they may make contact with someone. They may have a walk-in. Someone may call. And so those are a lot of the ways. Sometimes they will email. Sometimes it's a family member that calls and asks questions to get them in the door or to break the ice. And so there are different ways. Sometimes the police will bring someone to an organization. Lots of different ways that people contact. And there are also what is, I think, has really picked up traction is mobile advocacy, where organizations are going to people in different places out in the community. That's been really amazing.
Can you give an example of that? Mobile advocacy?
It removes the barrier for people to be able to get to the organization's physical site. And so, for example, someone contacts an organization, and the organization has an MOU with other entities out in the community, the library, a hospital, and they may meet them at that location and gather information there and offer them support and services.
Let's bring in Cindy now in Stevens Point. Hi, Cindy. What would you like to share?
Okay. I'm 61 years old. I went through abuse in my 20s. I was married. My husband was a Vietnam veteran. I think that had a lot to do with it. But also, I think what's going on in the United States today is drug and alcohol abuse contributes so much to abuse, verbal abuse and physical abuse. And I think the breakdown of the family is happening because there is no one at home when those children get off of that bus or get home from school. So I think that's why the violence, the drugs, all of that is happening, is because there is not the family unit anymore that there used to be. So that is my comment.
And Cindy, decades removed now from your abuse, do you feel like you're in a better state in life?
Yes, I do. But also it has caused me not to have a long-lasting relationship with anyone because I am so picky about who I want in my life. And I want to make sure that that never happens again, because the abuse didn't just happen to me. It happened to my children. And then what happens is it goes on, the yelling or the getting upset over stuff too quickly and not picking your fights instead of just, you know, just let some things go. But the thing is relationships are breaking down because of drug and alcohol abuse.
Well, Cindy,
and there's just so much of it out there.
Cindy, I want to thank you for sharing your personal story. Tiffany, how would you respond?
I think what Cindy expresses, there is a lot of there are a lot of trends that we see with the breakdown of the family. We know if you're familiar at all with the ACE study that focuses on traumatic events prior to the age of 18, that was done in the California area years ago. We're using a lot of trauma-informed care strategies in a lot of our systems now, in a lot of our organizations, within even our domestic violence programs within the state related to trauma-informed care, because we know that a lot of children are experiencing mental illness in the home, substance abuse in the home, or other related stressors, whether that's, and that could be, those could be coping strategies that lead to physical violence or sexual violence and things to that nature. I would agree with Cindy that a lot of those issues are impacting homes and unfortunately breaking them apart and leading to unfortunately more situations where children are seeing the cycle, seeing the abuse, and then unfortunately could be repeating that as an adult if not knowing what normal healthy relationships are.
We're talking with Tiffany Parker of Ignatian Healthcare in Fond du Lac and Monique Minkins of End Domestic Abuse Wisconsin. Monique, you know, looking at those overlapping issues in domestic violence, poverty, mental health, substance abuse, as Cindy brought up, can you address that in how that plays into what you see going on?
Mm-hmm. You know, I think domestic violence is a symptom of something greater. And we have to go to the root of why there is domestic violence. And we know it's about power and control, right? And we also know that we have to look at where the desire for this power and control comes from. And so I think that one thing I love my movement, and one thing I would love for us to do is look at the whole family and the whole person, all people that are involved in it, and look at what got someone here to start there. And on both sides, because there are red flags that come up and what tells us that these flags are okay. And please know, I am not victim blaming. And there is something greater. It's not just the domestic violence. It's the historical trauma. It's the generational trauma. It's all of those things that bring us to this point. And we have to deconstruct and unpack those things in order for us to move forward. And so when I think about how we respond to domestic violence, we respond in a way that is punitive and that leaves someone outside of society instead of pulling everyone in and asking everyone what happened to you and how do we move forward. And if we started there, I think we would have different results, and people would feel valued and feel like there is some control of the situation. Yeah. You know, I really do appreciate Cindy for calling in today, and I'm glad that she's still here.
Monique Minkins is Executive Director of End Domestic Abuse Wisconsin. Tiffany Parker, Director of Inpatient Behavioral Health, Addiction Services, and Domestic Violence Services with Agnesian Healthcare, a part of SSM Health. Thank you both for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And we'll continue our conversation about this right after a news update on the Ideas Network.